At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
I guess that is us right there. The bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 with you for one more hour here on this Saturday. Andrew Carlson and Joe George alongside Josh behind the glass. Want to get in on any of the conversation we have today? Feel free to do that at the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. If you want to text the show, you can hit us up on that exact same number or find us on Twitter. He's at Joe George Radio. I'm at Carlson Radio. Josh is at I Am J Chevy. So the Astros fell to the Dodgers last night, 3-2. But we saw a continuation of something that I wasn't really sure if we were going to see. We saw Mauricio Dubon get a second consecutive start, easy enough for me to say, at first base. And this was a moment of growth from Dusty Baker to me, because for the large part of the season, we know the Astros have not been great. Mm-hmm. But they have not been doing enough at the margins to give themselves the best possible shot at victory consistently, at least not in my opinion. There have been times where, hey, Chaz is better against these sort of pitchers, these sort of matchups. He's left on the bench, constantly throwing Yonier Diaz to the side and letting Martin Maldonado run out there every single day and not even getting Yonier any at-bats in any consistent fashion. There have been things that the Astros and Dusty Baker have not done with their lineup, like, I don't know, batting Jose Abreu in the first four or five batters on a very consistent basis, where if they had been making these adjustments from the beginning, look, maybe you add a couple more wins to the column. And I think that we're finally starting to see an acceptance from Dusty that things are going to have to change and he's going to have to play the margins game if the Astros are to end up where they want to end up this season.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what the lineup looks like tonight. So Jose Abreu said yesterday before the game, or Dusty Baker, sorry, said that he told Jose Abreu he was going to give him a chance to have a reset. And that the plan was for him to be in the lineup today. I'm curious if they actually follow through with that, or if we see Mauricio Dubon out there again at first. Because while I don't think it's a must, I do think it does give you consistently the best chance to win right now to have Dubon in the lineup every single day. And I think just however you get that done, it helps. Like, I think the reality is, like, the best lineup you can put out there includes Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick, Mauricio Dubon, and Yonier Diaz. And look, I know Jake's been struggling a lot recently, so I guess you could even take him out.
Replace him with Corey Jolks, fine.
And how you put those pieces together is up to Dusty Baker, right? But Mauricio Dubon has contributed enough. It's funny, Chandler Rome's tweet that he put out a while ago that was going around again yesterday is just like, where would this team be without Mauricio Dubon? It's just the truth. Like, him and Yonier Diaz, like, should be playing every single day right now. I think that, to me, is how Dusty Baker's approach should be going forward. Is that Dubon and Diaz are in the lineup. And whether that means Diaz is at first, catcher, or DH, that's fine. Whether Dubon is at second, short, third, DH, left field, first base, kind of everywhere, besides catcher, like, that's cool too. But, like, those two guys should be in the lineup because I think they just help you put your best foot forward at this point. And if you want to prove me wrong that, like, that they still have a chance to win the division, you got to start putting wins together. And putting your best lineup out there means something. And to me, what that means is that Peña and Altuve don't get the same day off anymore.
Yeah.
That's got to end.
There have been too many times, and that's the exact sort of thing that I was talking about at the start of the segment, where there have been too many times where the Astros, by their own volition, are simply just not putting their best out there, and it's costing them games. It's cost them games throughout the season. And you're at this point now where if you want to have a shot to win the division, you can no longer afford to shoot yourself in the foot before the game even starts. Like, that cannot happen anymore.
And look, there's a reason. My guess is there's a reason why Bly Madris was called up. He's the below average minor league player, even. But I mean, he's okay. But was he? I think he's a lefty bat.
Okay is a little nice.
Yeah, I know it is. You don't want to crush him. His career in 2022, he hit 177.
Yeah, that's a little worse than okay.
And he wasn't great in the minors either. Like, he comes up, he's going to be with the Astros now. And like, while I don't, the one negative about playing Yadier Diaz every day is that if he's your DH, you're potentially going to have to cancel out the DH sometimes, or you're just never going to be able to pinch it for Martin Maldonado.
Because God forbid that Martin Maldonado is not behind the dish for 90% of the Astros games this season.
So if you had a choice, and you had to, because you have right now, you have two ultimate negatives in your lineup. Because like, while Jose Abreu started June well, his batting average, his numbers overall are still good. The last week's been poor. If you had to choose, though, every day or 5 days a week, who would you want in your lineup, Maldi or Abreu starting? Which do you prefer?
This is really tough because I'm choosing between two incredibly ugly options here. But honestly, I believe I'd go with Maldonado. Like, I would have Maldonado in the lineup over Jose Abreu. Because in large part, I know that Dusty is not going to put Maldi any higher than ninth.
I know.
Dusty is always going to have Martin penciled into that nine hole. And if Jose Abreu's in the lineup, there's a decent chance that, depending on whoever else he's given a day off, Jose Abreu could be batting fifth. And yeah, he was batting as high as fourth.
He's in the top five.
Like, and given the performances that Jose Abreu's put on display this season, that's simply unacceptable. And I know at least Martin will be down at the bottom of the order, have the least possible showings at the plate. Like, it's a terrible choice, but I think I'd take Martin.
And that's what factors into the Yadier Diaz and Dubon equation, is that if you have to make a tough decision about who's in and who's out of the lineup, it's really what's the Astros' problem right now. It's like, how do you put your best lineup on the field? You know, I personally thought we were going to see a lot of Dubon and left. Like, and Diaz at DH. Like, when Alvarez went down, I thought what we were going to be looking at was Maldi behind the plate, Diaz is your DH, and obviously Bregman, Pena, Altuve, Abreu. And I thought in left field, that first game after Alvarez got hurt when Dubon played in left, you're going to see Dubon, Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers in center, and Tucker in right. And like, that to me was like, okay, that's the best lineup you can put forward. Because while I like Corey Jolks, I think it's a little inflated right now. It's obviously been going a lot more downhill quickly. But that is the best lineup, unless you're going to have Jake and Chaz both in the outfield at the same time. And Dusty seems like hell-bent on not doing that.
Yeah, Dusty seems to have these things that he refuses to do for whatever reason. And one of them is start Jake Myers and Chaz McCormick in the same outfield. And it's just a continuation of, there are solutions that are available for this Astros team internally. We all know that they need to go find a bat before the trade deadline to add into their lineup. We all know that we would like to see the team add another pitcher to the starting rotation. But even if those things do not happen, there are solutions to some of the problems the Astros have presented themselves with throughout the course of the season. And they consistently have not taken the option of going with those solutions. And that's something that they just need to change moving forward. Because if they don't, they're going to have zero shot. I still don't believe they're going to catch the Rangers. But if they don't put their best foot forward, they're going to have zero shot of doing so.
Yeah, but it's the ultimate like conundrum they're in, because just the solution's not easy.
Yeah,
and the Abreu thing is really tough, because like, that early part of June, like, it really looked like he was going to be turning it around.
There were finally signs of life, like, not just from a results perspective, but from a process perspective too. Like, everything looked better with him. He wasn't swinging at some of the garbage on a consistent basis off the plate. He was making harder contact, pulling the ball for the first time in God knows how long. And then, like you said, the past week or so, those signs of life have seemingly diminished.
Yeah, look, there's a reason why Dusty Baker gave him a reset for the first time, like, because it probably felt like they were building something, and then they got to put it on pause. And I will say that, like, at the end of the day, to me, the ultimate thing that stops this is, it's not just Yordan Alvarez. You know, think about the guys we're talking about right now. We're talking about Jose Abreu. He replaced one of the worst hitters on the team last year in Yuli Gurriel, and they still won the World Series. We're talking about Mauricio Dubon and Yadier Diaz. Like, the real problem here with this team, that like, they need to get everyone moving forward in the right
direction. The
stars
need to play like stars.
Yeah, man. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like,
yeah.
Like, Bregman, Pena, I know he's brought back the leg kick. Kyle Tucker can't figure out if he's good with gloves or not with gloves. Like, hit the home run last night, of course. And he's been good, but he's not been... I'm almost starting to get disappointed with Kyle Tucker because I've put such high expectations on him myself.
Yeah, you were campaigning for MVP at the start of the season.
I think he has that talent, but he just doesn't take his game to that height yet. And I think it's still there, but like he can't be what Alvarez is to this team right now on a consistent basis. And like maybe I've overhyped him myself, but I just feel like when I watch Kyle Tucker play, I'm like, that guy can be that on a consistent basis. And he just hasn't been at all in his career, which is okay. He's still a great player, but he's just not a great, great player. If the Astros core lineup still gets going more, you know, they can go somewhere. They had three hits last night. Dubon, Tucker, I don't remember who had the third or someone towards the bottom of the order. Like, you got nothing from Altuve. You're getting nothing from Bregman. And if those guys can figure it out, we don't have to focus on the bottom of the lineup as much.
That's the thing. If you need Mauricio Dubon and Yonier Diaz to be big pieces of your lineup moving forward, your lineup's not performing at a level that is acceptable for a World Series contending team. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. And it's the elephant in the room that I feel most Astros fans haven't really wanted to face. Because, look, all Astros fans, we love Alex Bregman. We love Jose Altuve. You know, we love Kyle Tucker. But the reality of the situation is that these guys have been underperforming massively given the expectations that we had for them coming into the season. And if that doesn't change, like, you can do all you want about these fine margins that I've been talking about. That's only going to help so much. And maybe the margins are, maybe, you know, fine-tuning those margins is able to push the performance of some of these star guys a little bit higher. But you're 100% right, Joe. If those guys don't start performing, this Astros team, it doesn't really matter what the accessory pieces like Dubon are going to do.
And at least with Altuve, we've seen signs of life over with the four-hit game last weekend.
It's just so up and down.
But like it's been trending up-ish, I would say. They're going to figure it out. Like that is the one thing I do agree with, that if that Altuve, Bregman, you know, Tucker, these guys will put it together consistently. Yordan Alvarez in the lineup will help with that. Of course, you hope that there's a small chance Michael Brantley can. I think Jeremy Peña's played kind of as expected, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is if you had higher expectations for Peña based upon his postseason run, I understand that. But nothing he did in last regular season said this guy is going to be a consistent star-level player moving forward.
Yeah, Jerry Peña had one of the most incredible postseason runs, and he got it's just like Hunter Brown. We kind of, Astros fans have kind of unfairly put these guys into categories that they just honestly don't belong in, and so it's almost impossible for them to meet expectations. But they've been solid. But like, could they? They will get a lot better. I think both will still be huge pieces for this team over the next 5 years, and part of the reason why I think this window can extend for a while, just right now they're not at their best, and like they'll get there, but it's just been, last night was one of the reasons why I'm really glad they installed the pitch clock because it was like an hour and a half into the game and they were six innings in, and I was like, can you imagine if we had to do this for 4.5 hours every night?
It would have been rough. It would have been very, very rough.
And the offense was struggling like this. At least you guys are only taking 3 hours.
No, it would have been very, very rough to watch. 713-780-3776 if you want to get in on any of the Astros conversation. Coming up next, the Astros are in the midst of a 10-game stretch, which kicked off last night, that I believe is going to define their season. What do we need to see from the Stros to give them a realistic shot at winning the AL West? We're going to talk about that next. This is the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Old Greg.
I know what you're thinking. Here comes Old Greg. He's a scaly manfish. I'm Old Greg.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen with you for another 40-odd minutes here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson alongside Joe George, our guy Josh behind the glass spinning the tunes. So, the Astros are in the midst of a 10-game stretch here, Joe, that is truly going to define their season. Like, we are going to have a very, very good idea of where the Astros stand following this 10-game stretch, and especially with that 4-game series with the Rangers at the end of this. Mm-hmm. For you, what is the minimal level of acceptability for how the Astros can perform in this stretch for you to feel like they've got a shot at potentially staying in the AL West mix? Like, do they have to go 6-4, 7-3 during this stretch, or does it all depend on what they do in that series with the Rangers?
I would like to see, to change my real tune about where they're at in the season, in a perfect world, the Astros, who are 6.5 games back today from the Rangers in the AL West, I would like them to be 3.5 or 4.5 games back by July 3rd when that game ends. So not necessarily the record as much matters to me anymore. It's more just keeping pace and passing up the Rangers just a little bit. If you can keep pace and then take 3 or 4 from the Rangers in that series, that's a great thing. So like it's really about it's, you know, I heard Dusty Baker do an interview last week. And he said, if we just gain one game every week, and it was on like Tuesday, we'll be in first place by August 1st by the trade deadline. And he's right.
That's a great way to look at it.
If you just gain one game every week, like that's all you have to do is gain one game. But right now, every week, they're losing a game. So you got to start to reverse that at some point. So by July 4th, before they return home to play the Rockies, I would like to see them within 4.5 games and then really just full picture going all the way into the All-Star break. I would like to be 3.5 games back. It would just make me feel better. Like, the one thing you can't do is it would really, if you lose a couple games here and the Rangers don't keep pace and they start winning and then you lose that series, like, you're talking 10 games.
Yeah, that's the thing with this stretch here is, at minimum, you need to keep pace. But what you really need to make sure you don't do is fall further behind. Because if you are, we're talking 8.5, 9.5 games back by the time the stretch is over, I believe you can probably write off the AL West at that point. Yeah. Like, you can say the division is long gone and you are only looking at the wild card.
It would be, yeah, because the second half of the All-Star, like the second half, the idea you're going to gain 8 to 9 games on someone,
just not realistic.
It just doesn't happen that often. Like, it's, you would really need to see the Rangers like fully collapse to help you do that. And the reason why I think it does matter now to gain that ground versus hoping that the Rangers do, you're hoping that everything starts to get together and be better for the Astros. And you're banking on the idea that this team that we've all watched be a disaster in the Rangers for the last 5 years is going to just fall apart. Like, they've already lost DeGrom. Like, they haven't had DeGrom. So, like, it's not like you can, you know, it'd be, if DeGrom was pitching today, I'd be like, oh, they're going to lose DeGrom at some point. Like, that's going to help you out. But he's already gone. Like, there are guys on their roster who they're starting to talk about conserving innings to make sure that, like, they're healthy in the long term. So, the biggest thing is, like, you're banking on someone else's failure that you can't guarantee. You're hoping that the Rangers, you know, are going to fall apart. And the thing with the Rangers is that their biggest weakness is so clearly the bullpen.
And that's the easiest thing to fix. That's the easiest thing in Major League Baseball to fix, is to make adjustments to the bullpen. We saw James Click do it multiple times time here in Houston, where he would retool the entire bullpen at the deadline, bring in the closers from a multitude of crappy teams, and all of a sudden, your bullpen is extremely formidable heading into the postseason. Yeah, you don't control any of those pieces heading into the next season, but it doesn't really matter because, hey, you fixed your issues for this year, and the Rangers are going to be extremely, extremely active at the trade deadline. They're going to get arms in that bullpen, and look, we've seen the duo out in Kansas City. It's Aroldis Chapman and someone else that I'm blanking
on. Barlow?
I believe Barlow. It could be that I'm blanking on the name of right now. Kansas City's pitching them as a package deal almost. If the Rangers get those two arms, I don't want to say you can forget about the division entirely, but it is going to become very, very difficult to make up that ground. And that's why I believe you need to make some of that up now. Like, at minimum, you need to not lose pace throughout this entire stretch. But if you don't make up ground now, the Rangers are only going to get stronger towards the end of the season, because I have every belief that they're going to make those moves. So you need to make up that ground now while the team seemingly has a few weak spots, a few chinks in the armor.
Yeah, I totally agree with. It's a... Like the second half of the season, kind of separately, we're like, if you don't make up that ground, you do have two more series versus the Rangers in the second half. You do have two series versus the A's, seven games versus the A's left, six games versus the Rangers after the All-Star break. You play the Guardians again. You play the Angels a bunch. You play the Red Sox, the Tigers. You play the Kansas City Royals twice. You have, just looking at it, you kind of got a cakewalk the second half of the season. Like, you got some teams that are a disaster. A team like Boston is good to have on your schedule in the second half of the season because they're likely to sell.
Yeah.
I think a team like Miami could sell. Hopefully they're selling Jorge Soler to you.
That would be fantastic.
But, like, there are teams where, like, you could say, all right, the Astros didn't make up the ground as much as we want or we hope, but in the second half of the season, they can really make that run. But getting this within five games, I think, is where, by the All-Star break, would be, like, the, like, almost, like, worst case, I think. But really, I'm looking right there. You're talking about a game and a half over the next, like, 18 games. That's all you got to make up is a game and a half. You have five games after the All-Star break, everyone would feel much better.
100%. And the thing with the schedule, too, is a lot of people have talked about how, oh, the Rangers have had this super soft schedule, and they've just been feasting on these poor opponents. Well, you know what? Their schedule doesn't get all that much more difficult for the remainder of the season. Like, the reality is the Rangers just do not have it super tough this season. So, okay, maybe from instead of having the easiest schedule, they have the 10th or 11th easiest schedule. With how good this baseball team is, or how good it appears to be and how good we think they are, it's not going to make that much of a difference. And that goes back to your point, Joe, of you can't prey on the failures of the Rangers. Like, you can't expect the Rangers to just all of a sudden implode out of nowhere like that Titanic submarine. Like, they are going, like, you are going to have to go chase them down and catch them. It's not going to be them falling back to the pack.
Yeah, and even if they do fall back, like, they're not going to fall back seven games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have to do some work. So, the thing is, with the biggest thing for the Astros is they need to fix their offense. They need to get healthy. And sometimes those things work together. And then really, the big question would be, do you believe in J.P. France, Hunter Brown, and Jose Urquidy long-term? Like, do you believe that those guys can help get you to where you need to be? And I think the answer is yes. You know, Hunter Brown, one thing that, like, I will say to the pro-Maldi crowd is that his last three starts, two of them have been atrocious, and those have all been with Maldi behind the plate. I'd like to see, you know, Diaz get back there behind the plate for Hunter Brown.
Maldi's got to learn how to catch Hunter Brown, man. He's just got to catch him for the rest of the season to learn how to do it.
I'm not a big, like, hate on Dusty Baker guy, but I hate that excuse so much.
It's the worst possible excuse in the world because he doesn't use it in reverse for Yannier with any of the other pitchers.
Why does Yannier not catch Fromber ever?
Oh, well, I mean, you know.
Like, it's my biggest, like, it's like, don't, stop feeding me garbage, okay? Like, if you're going to, like, if you don't want Maldi to do it because you think Diaz is not calling a good game for Hunter Brown, even though he's having success, like, just say it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that's what you think it is, Dusty, like, that's fine. Like, I hate hearing those excuses and then not seeing the follow through on the other side because, like, the actual statement itself is, like, really valid.
100%.
Like, if he gets hurt, Maldi needs to catch Hunter Brown. But then, like, what happens if Maldi gets hurt?
And you mean, like, last year when he had a hernia and a broken hand?
Now, that might be one of those things where Dusty Baker, to give him a little bit of credit here, knows that Framber Valdez is, like, the ultimate, like, loose cannon right now. I love Framber, but you can look at him statistically, like 90% of his bad starts over the last 2 years have come when he's not wearing the Sunday blue jerseys.
Look, Maldonado for Framber, it feels like almost plays a dual role of psychologist and catcher.
Yeah.
Like, so that's the one where I can understand, hey, maybe we don't want to break up that battery whatsoever. But even then, you want to see Yannier start trying and build that level of relationship because
he's going to do it next year.
He's going to be the everyday catcher next year. Or at least I pray that he's going to be the everyday catcher next year. We're going to have some serious problems if he's not. But yeah, it's very frustrating because it seems like Dusty has this reasoning he uses, but he picks and chooses when he decides to use it. And I just don't understand. Like, Chaz in center field is a whole another ball game, but it's like,
yeah,
it's another one of those things where it seems like Dusty, just he has his favorites and he sticks with them.
What's the scenario where Maldi's your everyday catcher next year?
I don't want to envision this, so I'm not even going to entertain this discussion.
I think there's only one way. I think they have to win the World Series again, and then Dusty Baker has to say he wants a three-peat. Like, that to me is like the only way that Martin Maldonado is everyday catcher next year is if the Astros win another World Series this year and Dusty goes, I'm not stopping at two. I want three, and Maldi and the gang are back together, and then we'll be here. We'll be here on June 24th, 2024, having the same conversation.
Well, you know what? If that's the price to pay, I'd be willing to pay that price.
Oh, yeah. I would do it. I would definitely. I would love to be on the field when the Astros win the World Series again and then be ready to bitch about Martin Maldonado playing time 6 months later. That sounds great.
Look, if there's any other scenario, I'm out. But if it's the Astros winning the World Series, goddamn it, I'm in. He's Joe George. I'm Andrew Carlson. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to get in on any of the conversation we've got on deck, 713-780-3776. That's the HRMP listener line and text line. We're switching things up with the Rockets again coming up in this next segment. The draft, Thursday night, we all know what the Rockets did. They knocked it out of the park, getting Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore. But how does that affect what they're going to do in free agency and the plan that the Rockets want to enact with their team moving forward? We're going to dive into that next, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'll take the Negroni.
A Negroni. Magliato with Prosecco in it.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen with you here for another 30 minutes on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George alongside our guy Josh behind the glass. So, look, I just almost want to listen to the song for another, you know, 10 or 15 seconds. So fade that down a little bit more slowly here, Josh. Fantastic. But the Rockets, they had a great draft. Everyone's been talking about it. You know, just universal rave reviews for the talent that they've added in Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore. Mm-hmm. But I would say there are still a lot of questions that need to be asked of both the team and the roster as you head into free agency. And for the first time in Rafael Stone's tenure as Rockets general manager, he's going to have a lot of money and cap space to play with. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Rockets approach free agency. We've already seen the links to James Harden. Those have been ever-present throughout the season and have only grown as the offseason has started. We've seen some links to Fred VanVleet, some very, very strong links to Brook Lopez. And there are just a lot of questions on how the Rockets really want to approach free agency because, look, Tillman Fertitta, when they hired Ime Udoka, he talked about where this Rockets team was headed. And, you know, how this they essentially saying that they were tired of losing and that this is a new phase in the Rockets development. And honestly, I'm not sure, like, after the way the draft panned out, if that's really going to be the case, because you've got so many guys who are considered still developmental prospects. If you want them to develop, that's going to come at the cost of wins.
It is hard to figure out the way that they go into phase two and start learning to win, but also while developing these guys at the exact same time. Because, like, while you could add some veteran presences, like, there's only so many minutes to go around. Like, and that's where I think the ultimate first thing is going to come down to Kevin Porter Jr. Like, what is his future? Because right now, he's obviously still in your lineup. Like, I don't really know exactly how you want to play Amen Thompson, KPJ, and Jalen Green, but it does feel like if that was the roster today without free agents, those are your three, like, guard slash small forward, and then Jabari Smith and Alperen Şengün. Like, how does that really work? Does it make sense? I'm not sure. Like, because to me, the biggest thing this team needs is they need a defensive-minded center and a leader veteran point guard that can help bring the young guys along.
Yeah, here's what Tillman had to say at Ime Udoka's introductory press conference, and you'll tell me if that's someone who sounds like he's comfortable with a team that's going to continue to potentially lose.
Now we're on to the next phase, and we're going to develop these stars, and we've got free agent space this year. There's nothing like cap space, which we have approximately $60 million available. So when you mix these new stars, these new young stars with the free agents, I'm expecting a lot from these guys here. So that's exciting, and it's time to get on the right path.
So he's expecting a lot from them here. Look, I'm expecting some improvement, but I don't know if expecting a lot is really realistic for what this group is currently constructed is going to be capable of putting together.
I mean, if I was Rafael Stone, that makes me feel like I'm on the hot seat.
100%.
What is a realistic? So Woj directly mentioned Brook Lopez during the NBA draft, which like was interesting when talking about Milwaukee. He said that that Houston is the biggest threat to getting Brook Lopez. Frankly, like, I think there's a very good chance the Rockets could just gut the Milwaukee Bucks organization and sign Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton. Like that, you know, Chris Middleton early on in the offseason, even as recent as like 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Rockets were the betting favorites to land him if he left Milwaukee. And while he's not the player that he was probably 2 years ago, he's still really solid. You have the money to spend. Like, good shooter, good defender, good leader, it seems like. Overpay, yes, but probably a 3-year deal. And that's a positive. But let's say it's that. It's Middleton and Brook Lopez.
As a Rockets fan, for the competitiveness of next year's team, I'd be extremely excited about that. Yeah. From a long-term outlook, I would be less thrilled. And mainly with the Brook Lopez piece, just because of the fact that I want to see Alperen Şengün go out there and get 35-odd minutes a game.
Yeah,
I want to see him be the starting center for this franchise and see if he can truly be the cornerstone piece that a lot of people believe he can be. Baby Jokic. Is that truly what Alperen Şengün is? Is he somebody that you can legitimately build your team around? This is the season that we need to find that out, because we're going to have to make decisions contractually and on his future extremely quickly. So I think I'd be okay with the Chris Middleton signing. I'm not a huge fan of it, just because the guy hasn't really managed to stay healthy for a couple of seasons now. And typically once guys' health starts declining, it doesn't all of a sudden magically pick back up. That being said, he would offer a level of veteran leadership that this team has sorely lacked for the past couple of seasons. He would immediately come in. I'd assume he'd start at small forward, and he would immediately offer a level of legitimacy and someone that Ime Udoka could lean on in that locker room, unlike anything the Rockets have had for the past 3 seasons.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see like if they go the Fred VanVleet route, what that means. I think that to me means Kevin Porter Jr.'s time is over. You know, Jeremy has thrown around the idea of moving him to like small forward, you know, with his size.
I could get behind that.
And then I guess it's Amen Thompson coming off the bench, which like at the start of his career is okay. And then as he develops past Fred VanVleet, hopefully in just like a year and a half, that Fred VanVleet would move to the backup role on this team. That would be cool. But they are in a weird spot where, you know, one of the names that's been popular is Cam Johnson from Brooklyn.
He's another guy that you could potentially slot in at the three.
Yeah.
And, well, the size isn't necessarily ideal. The defense isn't necessarily ideal. He brings something that this team desperately needs, which is shooting.
I think it's like, it's almost at this point to me, it's just like, just to overpay a bunch of shooters.
Yeah.
Like, do you need a real leader at point guard? Yeah, I think that would help. But like, maybe you are the team that just overpays for Austin Reeves and just like bring in a shooter, a quality player to come off the bench where like he's not really, you know, he's not part of your starting lineup, but like he's there. And that's where like it's hard to hear about the, you know, what Tillman wants for the next phase of this team. And I don't totally get it.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily match the timeline. Like, yeah, it's like given the current construction of the roster with, you know, ideally we have Amen Thompson at point guard, Jalen Green at the two, you know, Şengün at the five and Jabari at the four. Like, if we have that, that's not a team that is currently constructed to be super successful next year.
I don't know if they can do anything to be super successful.
No, I'm not saying super. I'm saying like from what Tillman seemingly intimated in that entire press conference, and that's the last time we've heard from him.
Sure.
It seemed like he wanted them to be competing for the play-in. That was what I gathered from the gist of his comments.
Yeah, and so I saw we had it on here, which didn't mention it earlier, but so all the mock drafts early on, probably based on Vegas odds, have the Rockets with the 5th pick next year.
That would be a failed season, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a massively failed season.
Rafael Stone will be fired.
Yeah.
I think. If you give the Oklahoma City Thunder the fifth pick in the draft, then I think Rafael Stone will get fired.
Because your pick next year is only top four protected.
Yeah.
So that is by far the worst possible outcome if you end up with the fifth pick. And the most important thing, obviously, is sort of like what we've talked about with the Texans over the last few months, where you need to see development from C.J. Stroud. And if C.J. Stroud looks like the dude, then nothing else really matters all that much for what the Texans do this season. For the Rockets, it's not exactly the same. You need to see more improvement in the win-loss record. But you need to see some tangible improvements from a, hey, Jalen Green is developing into potentially the star player we thought he could be when he was drafted. Jabari Smith looks like an absolute stud and someone that you can rely on as a second or third option on a legitimate team. Amen Thompson is the facilitator and distributor that we all wanted him to be on the offensive end of the court and is a lockdown defender. Like, if we're not seeing the development from these young players, then that's really, to me at least, all that truly matters this season. Obviously, that needs to come with some level of improvement, and I think it naturally would in the win-loss column.
I would expect the Rockets to, you know, it's funny, the Michael Jordan fired his coach after doing this, but James Borrego, at one point, he took Charlotte from a 24-win team to a 34 to a 44-win team in 3 years. I think that's what the Rockets' expectation should be.
You need to be in the 30s next year.
Yeah.
And if you do that, I will be relatively happy as a Rockets fan, even if you get, say, the 8 to 12. If you're picking in the 8 to 12 range and you have to give that to the OKC Thunder,
fine.
I will live with that.
I mean, look, asking the Rockets to, you know, the Pelicans were the last team in, so the Thunder were the last team in at 40 and 42 into the play-in game. That's an 18-game change. That's a big jump. They won 22 games next year. You're talking about almost a 100% like increase in wins next year. That's a tall task.
Even with Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez, that would be a big ask of the team.
That's Jalen Green all-star.
Yeah.
That's getting two guys and Jalen Green developing into a superstar before our eyes, and Jabari taking a big step as well. But I will say, I think that's ultimately what this next year comes down to is Jalen. Like, how efficient and how good can he be now with Udoka and the new coaching staff around? Because, like, my expectation for the Rockets is that, like, 35 wins is a reasonable goal that they should accomplish next season at a bare minimum. If they spend a bunch of money in free agency, then it might change to a play-in game.
Yeah, it all depends on who they bring in and how they expect those veterans to really impact the on-court product. Because if you're bringing in veterans just to be a presence in the locker room, I wouldn't be necessarily upset with that, because I think most Rockets fans, they just want to see this young core develop. So if you're bringing in veterans to be that backbone of the team, totally fine by me. But if you're bringing them in to be a serious impact for the on-court product, that's going to have to change. That no questions asked means there have to be a lot more W's in that win column.
For sure.
All right, he's Joe George. I'm Andrew Carlson. We have one segment left here on the bullpen, and we're going to have a little fun with this one. Over the last week, there's been a lot of questionable stuff going on, and we've got a couple bones to pick with a whole bunch of things, from Rob Manfred to ESPN's god-awful draft coverage to CJ's comparisons to Dak Prescott. We're going to throw some shade coming up next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Watch out, door.
1 year ago, we knocked on the door. This year, we beat on the door. Next year, we're going to kick the son of a...
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of the show here on the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. With you till 2 o'clock, Andrew Carlson and Joe George. If you want to get in this final segment, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. Text line is that exact same number. So for this final segment here, Joe, we're going to have a bit of fun, or at least I hope it's a little bit of fun. So it started with the Rob Manfred comments, and I've got a few bones to pick with a couple things that have gone down over the past week, but it really started with Rob Manfred, and he just won't refuse to let sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah, he sucks.
He is the worst commissioner in pro sports, I think, by a pretty wide margin. I don't follow the NHL, so I can't attest to.
Gary Bettman does suck.
Yeah, I can't attest to how like he would compare. But generally speaking, outside of the improvements to the pace of play Rob Manfred has made in Major League Baseball this season, which admittedly it was a fantastic change, he's awful. And in that interview with Time Magazine he did this past week where he's regretting the fact that he gave the Astros players immunity and feels like he could have gotten to the truth without it. Dude, just let it go, man. Like, can we not let this cheating controversy and cheating scandal go and die? I understand that the Astros are playing the Dodgers, and because of that, you know, Dodgers fans are going to be up in arms. But all of these players on the roster, almost the entire rosters for both sides, are different than where they were in 2017. And at this point, why are we bringing this stuff up? Like, Rob Manfred, just let it go, dude.
My biggest issue with Rob Manfred is that he's a coward and that he is unwilling to make a stance. Because if you're going to have a take, stick to it. And the idea that he might do things differently is cowardly.
He's pandering.
He said, quote, "I might have gone about the investigation process without the grant of immunity and see where it takes us." Take out the might, dude. And then he said, "Maybe not my best decision ever." If you're going to make that stance, make your stance. Make the stance that you made a mistake. First of all, educate yourself on what your collective bargaining agreement looked like because of why you couldn't suspend the players. But what's their point, dude? Because don't you watch the Astros right now? Don't you see that you won? You got your way, Rob Manfred. You hurt the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the Astros right now is the fact that they have no prospects besides Drew Gilbert.
They've got no depth.
Like,
none.
The draft picks you took from them, it worked. I'm sorry it didn't work on your timeline and they won another World Series, but like, the Astros' biggest issues start with the fact that they lost their draft picks. Jeff Luhnow doesn't work in baseball. AJ Hinch does. Carlos Beltran does. Like, these guys are coming back. But you know who else works in baseball? Barry Bonds. Mark McGwire. Those guys both had hitting coaching jobs in the last 3 or 4 years. Like, it's Rob Manfred, and I know he says he regrets his calling it a piece of metal, the trophy, but dude, you did.
Yeah.
Like,
you made these decisions, you have to live with them. And in this interview, it just feels to me like he's pandering to the Dodger fan
100%.
Solely because this series is coming up right now. Like, solely because the series is happening right now, he wants to buy himself a little credit with the Dodger fan for whatever reason. And I'm done with it. I've been done with Rob Manfred for a while, but this is just another the latest example of him being just a fraud and a bozo. One of the other things this past week that I've had a serious issue with, ESPN's NBA draft coverage, man.
Ooh.
Dude, I was here producing Glenn's show that Thursday night. So I didn't have access to consistently follow what was going along with the draft on Twitter. Didn't have access to volume on the TV. So I was just following along, looking up at the screen, you know. And I feel like it shouldn't be overly difficult for someone to have the draft on mute and still be able to follow along with whatever is happening. Yet it was nigh impossible to do that with the NBA draft. Between that and just the overall coverage as a whole, ESPN has got to do better. There was a joke.
Yeah, and part of it's their partner. The NBA has to do better, too. The idea that they still, like, ruin moments in time intentionally blows my mind. Like, the fact that, like, there are Hall of Fame basketball players in the NBA today, and you can't use pictures from draft night because they're in hats of teams they never played for.
So idiotic.
It's, like, one of the dumbest things that, like, I've ever seen in my life. It's confusing. It makes no sense. I get it. Like, if the pick involved like was like in the Bradley Beal trade, that's different. When you're just trading straight draft capital, it doesn't make any sense. But then all of a sudden, I saw the Bulls player that they traded up for in the second round, the kid from Tennessee. He was wearing a Bulls hat, and I'm like, "Well, they don't have a pick. How did they get that? I just totally missed it." It's terrible. It's too long. I mean, it's. Like, and everything doesn't need to be a freaking sob story. Like, they've gone too emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get they want to celebrate it.
We don't need to hear from the parents after every single draft selection. None of these parents can even speak on air, or I won't say none. Almost none of them can speak on air. They're on camera for the first time in their lives or close to the first time in their lives. They're all nervous as hell, and they don't give you any good content.
Like, it's just so funny how, like, the same company does such two different products.
Yeah, the NFL draft, phenomenal. Like phenomenal product.
C.J. Stroud's a Houston Texan. Here is why he fits into their offense. Here is why he's going to work in the San Francisco style scheme. Here's why Will Anderson's going to work with D'Amico Ryans. Amen Thompson, and it's just about like family and story. And like, that's great. I get it. It's a celebration of life, of achievement. But like, they just have made it clear that the draft is not for you, the fan, anymore. The draft is for only the players, and it is for so they feel good about themselves. ESPN also. Because like, I didn't gain anything. And I get you don't want to like crush people, okay? This is their moment. But the fact that like no one on television questioned Jet Howard being taken as high as he did, like, blows my mind. Like, one of the most overrated players we've had in college basketball. Michigan has accomplished nothing over the last 2 years. He should not have been that high of a draft pick, but like, no one cares. And like, And it's funny, I heard Ryan Russillo talk about how he was told that it's like, well, they don't want to be mean to these kids when they're 18. Dude, in 2 months, you're going to call them trash.
Yeah, you are going to get overly criticized almost the minute Summer League starts and you don't perform.
Like, Stephen A. Smith is going to be crushing Amen Thompson for something he does in a Rockets game, if they actually talk about the Rockets for once, in like 3 weeks. Like, why can't you be critical on draft night? It's honestly, it's a terrible product. The NBA draft coverage has honestly just gotten so bad.
And
so
it was their most watched draft in years, apparently. Yeah. Like, they had over like 3.8 million or something like that watching the draft. I'm sure all for Wemby.
Wemby!
But man, like...
I know I got one on here that I don't like. I got people, why does it make sense to change my In-N-Out burger? What about Whataburger saying the W stands for Wembanyama?
Oh, dude, that was the worst.
What are you doing, man?
Dude, Whataburger turning heel, man. Unacceptable.
There's Whataburgers here, too?
Unacceptable. Do you have anything else? I know you... We're getting out of here in just a second.
We can talk about the CJ Stroud stuff later. Colin Cowherd sucks. Duh.
I mean, look, he has a point, but not a real one. Just the fact that, hey, CJ Stroud came into a worse situation, but other than that, the rest of his argument, total BS. This has been The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. He is Joe George. I am Andrew Carlson. Our guy Josh manning things behind the glass today. That's it for us. Coming up next Sunday, or this upcoming Sunday, we've got another edition of The Bullpen from 10 to noon. B-Mac, Sean, RJ, they're going to be with you for 2 hours tomorrow, so make sure to tune in for that. Until then, that's been it. See you guys.
ESPN 97.5.com. Get in the race.
One wrong twist of your steering wheel and that'll be the end of you.
The Gentle Dentist continues to hear compliments from their patients.
I am so glad we found the Gentle Dentist. It is truly pain-free. Not just for me, but I'm so happy my children have had such a wonderful experience. They love the Smile Club.
I'm a business owner, so every minute of my time is valuable. I love that they are so respectful of my time.
The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call now. New patients receive a free sonic toothbrush with a cleaning and exam. Call 614-431-3311.